I really care nothing about boxing. Boxing is a stepping stone just to introduce me to the audience. Like if I was still in Louisville, Kentucky, and never was a boxer, I might get killed next week in some type of freedom struggle, and you never read the news. But now, if I'm even say the wrong thing, and make news. So, like, boxing is just to introduce me to the struggle. Like, when I speak, I draw people in the States to draw my people, to teach them various things, which will give them dignity, pride, and self-help, and go for self, and help the ghetto, and help the dope prostitution problem, the juveniles, and I use my image to help or do all I can to stop a lot of trouble among our own people fighting and killing each other. So boxing is just going to be another year, but my main fight is for freedom and equality.
Welcome back. Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Amanda Stein in for Mitch Gallo, who returns on Monday. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show from TSN. Very happy to hear that he wants to talk about Muhammad Ali. Gord Miller, how are you?
I'm very well. I have two interesting stories about that. I was 12 years old visiting my aunt and uncle in New York. And my aunt took me into New York. They were in New Jersey. And took me into the city. She had to go shopping. And my uncle was working. So I went on this shopping trip with her. And I was bored out of my skull. And we came walking out of a store on Fifth Avenue. And there was Muhammad Ali. He had just come out of a television appearance at one of the networks. You know, they're all on 59th and 60th.
Right.
Up by Rockefeller Plaza. And all of a sudden, there he was about a half a block away. And I couldn't believe it. And before I could even, I wanted to get his autograph. It was like the city just stopped. All of a sudden, there were thousands of people around, hanging off light posts, standing on mailboxes. Cab drivers just stopped where they were. Like, it was unbelievable, the magnetic effect that he had. He paralyzed the city of New York just by walking down the street. I'd never seen anything like it before, and I'd say I've only seen it, anything even close to it, once since. We interviewed Pelé at the World Cup in France in 98 and came walking out of the studio with him and walked about a half a block with him down the Champs-Élysées, and it was the same kind of effect. But it was remarkable.
Here is Russ Amber from our show on Monday.
When I was in his presence, Mitch, and again, I'm saying this, I'm not trying to be blasphemous when I say this, but it was like being in the presence of a superior being. It was almost like being on a godlike aura around Ali.
Yeah, and we've heard a lot of that since he passed, Gord, and you know, there's something to it. You feel another person's energy and presence.
He is, without question, and I say this without question, the most important athlete of the last century. I tweeted a link to it. There's a really good tribute on HBO to him, voiced by Liv Schreiber.
Yes.
And it closes with, he wasn't the greatest because he said he was. He's the greatest because who would dare to argue otherwise?
By the way, Liv Schreiber should narrate everything.
He should. My life. I want Liv Schreiber to dominate.
But, yeah, but you know what? You know, I've been thinking a lot about this because he meant so much to me and so many others as well, obviously. But from a personal standpoint, I was going through watching old clips and old fights and sound bites and all of that all weekend long. And I realized that what hit me more, because we all knew he was fading, but is the vacuum that exists in popular culture today when you compare it to his time when he dominated it. And there's nobody even close to this.
Remember the thrill in Manila?
Sure.
Do you remember that? Everybody watched that fight. Like, we all watched that fight. I didn't know anybody who didn't. People didn't like boxing watched that fight. Like, never mind. And the boxing is a big part of it. No question. He's the greatest fighter and all that. But think about the three central discussions of the 1960s. Race, religion, and war. And he was central to all three conversations.
Yeah, we were lucky. We were lucky to live at the same time as Muhammad
Ali.
And
we don't live at the same. We don't live in that time now. We don't have that central communal event. We don't all watch. I mean, the closest we have is the Super Bowl, I guess. But we don't have that central cultural event that we all watch. It was interesting. So I remember the movie When We Were Kings, the documentary.
Yeah, I watched. Actually, let me mention it. DeCary Cinema, 9 o'clock tonight. The $1 cinema at DeCary, a special showing at 9 o'clock tonight.
Oh, great! So Leon Gast produced it, and TSN bought the rights to it. And so I went down and interviewed Leon Gast at his condo in New York, in his apartment. And so we actually had Bert Sugar on with Stephen Brunt for the show that we did to sort of a, the wraparound show we did about it. And Sugar was great, and Stephen was great. But so Leon Gast is telling me the story of how he developed the rolls of film as he could afford it, reel by reel. And he stored them in his apartment. He had racks of them, and he edited the film in his apartment. But the funniest part of it was he had his Academy Award sitting on the dining room table, like just sitting there, and he had a box of Cohiba cigars. And I said, oh, you like cigars? He goes, no, I don't like them at all. I don't smoke anymore. I said, oh, those are good cigars. He said, I know, yeah. He said, would you like one? I said, sure. He said, read the inscription on the box. It said, to Joe, happy birthday, Fidel. I'm like, who's Joe? Joe DiMaggio. He's a friend of mine. He lives a couple blocks away. Every year on his birthday, Fidel Castro sends Joe DiMaggio by diplomatic courier a box of Cohiba cigars, but DiMaggio doesn't smoke anymore. So he gave them to me, but I don't smoke anymore, so they just sit here.
Wow. So DiMaggio got around the embargo pretty good, huh?
So he gives me this cigar. So I have a cigar that Fidel Castro gave to Joe DiMaggio, who then in turn gave it to the Academy Award-winning director of the Muhammad Ali documentary.
Jeez.
So what do you do with a cigar like that?
Maybe it was one of those cigars that the CIA spiked when they tried to kill him.
That exploded. No. So I was out for dinner with some friends that night, and I said, like, look at this cigar. Like, and one of the guys at the table said, you got to smoke it. You got to go somewhere nice, and you got to smoke that cigar, because that's what it's meant for.
And did you?
I did that night, yeah, on the rooftop of the Empire Hotel.
Wow. Well, can you picture Gord Miller kicking back, smoking a cigar from Fidel himself that was meant for Joe DiMaggio?
That went to an Academy Award winning director.
Leon Gast was on this show, actually, the day before he left for the Academy Awards. I saw it at a private screening on Monday night, Gord, and I was reminded again what a fabulous film it was. It's so important for younger people especially to see it. It really catches Ali at his peak in the ring, outside of the ring.
But also, it also catches, and I think this is important too, Mitch, and Robert Lipsyte wrote a great obituary in the New York Times the weekend about Ali. There were missteps by Ali. And as much as he was a champion of racial equality and civil rights, he denigrated Joe Frazier badly.
Angelo Dundee, in the conversation I had with him that we're going to air after 6, gets into that a little bit. They recognize that he hurt Frazier. Dundee maintains that Muhammad Ali had no malice in him.
He may not have, but he furthered racial stereotypes in a pretty bad way.
Yeah, he referred to him as an Uncle Tom. And a
gorilla.
Right. And he'll explain the gorilla remark.
I don't think a man's death is the time to, I'm not picking on Muhammad Ali, but he's a complicated figure. And to sit here and say that, the parts where he stumbled also make him great.
It's human.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
so I hate to do this because it's not fair. So I don't know how to phrase the question properly. Who is the most visible person that cuts across as many, in terms of popular culture, could be sports, could be business, could be politics, could be the arts, could be a writer, broadcasting, any, all? Who is
the biggest figure in it? It's a hard world to crack because now, with the fragmented world we live in,
yeah,
it must be a musician.
Could it be Bono?
Maybe to an older generation, like just to people over 40 and 50, it would be Springsteen or Bono.
Yeah, some people are raising their fists. Other people are puking.
Yeah, sure. Would it be Jay-Z? Would it be Beyonce?
Well, let me ask the two younger, the kids here among us. Is there somebody that has an effect on you or even close to it? Because I don't think anybody, not to be, all knowing about it, but you I don't think you guys, maybe you're getting a sense of what Ali meant to so many of us, but you can't really feel it.
I think the morning that he died, I came in to do the Sports Center updates. And so I was going through all the old audio. And for me, it was a lot of stuff. I had honestly, like, I'll admit it, I'm 30. I just turned 30. I had never heard a bunch of this stuff. And I was moved for the first time the day after he died and really, you know, coming to terms with just how big a name he was and what he did, not just in the boxing ring, but outside. I didn't, you know, I'll admit it, I did not know that effect until, unfortunately, the morning after he passed away.
Yeah.
When Ali comes out against the war and says, you won't even support me here at home for the right to worship my own religion, and you want me to go fight them, and then, of course, says, you know, no member of the Viet Cong ever called me a N-word. I mean, that's a powerful statement. Imagine Michael Jordan saying that in his prime, or LeBron James. They're so careful now, right? Aren't they? Like, they're so packaged. They're so careful. They never take a stand.
Tiger.
They never say anything that might be construed as remotely controversial. You know, you know, the Trayvon Martin shooting in Florida, remember that a couple of years ago? Muhammad Ali in his prime would have come out and spoken about that.
Mm-hmm.
Forcefully and powerfully, right? But that doesn't
mean I'm saying you're talking about me about some draft, and all of you white boys are breaking your neck to get to Switzerland and Canada and London. I'm not going to help nobody get something my Negroes don't have. If I'm going to die, I'll die now, right here fighting you. If I'm going to die, you my enemy. My enemies are white people, not Viet Congs or Chinese or Japanese. You my opposer when I want freedom. You my opposer when I want justice. You my opposer when I want equality. You won't even stand up for me in America for my religious beliefs, and you want me to go somewhere and fight, but you won't even stand up for me here at home.
There's some of what Gord was alluding to. Sorry to cut you short there, Gord, but
I think that the other thing he did was, he rattled the establishment. And I always think, you know, those old white men who wrote sports were suddenly confronted by this black man who wouldn't act the way they wanted him to act. And Jackie Robinson went through this too, right? Jackie Robinson was beloved when he broke the color barrier and was, quote-unquote, a credit to his race. But when he started speaking out about his race, it angered the establishment. And Muhammad Ali angered the establishment. Remember Red Smith, the dean of sports writers at the time, called him no worse than the punks who were marching in the streets. Like, he didn't get it. And so all of a sudden, like, there's a great collection called The Best American Sports Writing of the Century. It's wonderful. It's an anthology of the best sports writing. And there's a whole section dedicated to Ali because of the effect he had. And all of a sudden you had sports writers talking to civil rights leaders and talking to, you know, Muslim imams to understand it better. I mean, it opened up a whole different world and rattled the establishment like no one ever has.
There were very, very few high-profile media people back in the day who supported Ali. Howard Cosell, notably, and Jerry Eisenberg, who's still around at the age of 85,
writing. Dick Schaap.
Dick Schaap, of course. Well, Dick Schaap was brilliant. What a brilliant broadcaster and writer. Yep.
Yeah, but Gordon and Mitch, like Amanda was talking about, how our generation is learning things we didn't necessarily know about Muhammad Ali. And Mitch, just you know, listening and being part of your show the last couple of days, it's been fascinating watching the generational divide with the boomers, the baby boomers on one side, and the generation, the older generation, the boomers' fathers, having often a different view of Ali.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to be an old man. I'm 50 years old. I don't want to sound like the old man, but what do young people get excited about? What do they get angry about? What are they marching the streets about?
In Quebec, it's pots and pans about free education, or it was.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
Seriously. Seriously.
It's a good point. I mean, I don't think I've ever, I've never really marched for anything in the streets with pots and pans, no less.
So let me ask you this. What makes you passionate enough that you would consider it? What's an issue that makes you passionate enough that you consider it?
For me, the intolerance to the LGBT community. That is something that I am extremely, extremely passionate about and will speak up for in any context, with whether it be with friends, on the air, or elsewhere. That to me, I guess, sort of fuels the fire.
And I think environment, I'm sure for a lot of younger people as well, the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, Ali, it comes along at a time when he wins a gold medal in the Olympics in Rome and can't eat in a cafeteria in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
So times are much better in that respect. And certainly in terms of, you know, the LGBT community, the ability to move the needle without the need for violent protest or mass protest is probably greater now. The ability to do that is greater now. But Ali comes along at a time when, you know, hundreds of young men were dying every week in Vietnam, when black people were being lynched routinely in the South, and their civil rights were being violated, and when religious tolerance was much less than it is now. And so he was the right man at the right time. And he was a brilliant athlete. He was an absolutely brilliant athlete.
Gord Miller of TSN, a treat. Thanks. We'll talk to you in a week.
Sounds good.